You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. As we race towards the new year, many of us will be making resolutions as per tradition. And the Cooperative Extension Service has a number of programs right now that can help you do that. So Sarah Lewis, Associate Professor with the UAF Cooperative Extension Service, is here with us. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Shelley.
Sarah, do you believe in making resolutions?
I have a love-hate relationship with resolutions, as I think most of us do, but I do think that sometimes if you make a resolution and there is actually something you can sign up for right away, that it probably will help you reach your goal.
Well, funny you should mention that. You're about to have a very busy January, lots of great stuff coming up for your future prospective students. So let's get started. I first wanted to talk about the diabetes prevention program that you lead. It's called Health Matters. It's all year long. You've offered this program for a while now, isn't that right?
I have. This will actually be the fourth year that I'm offering it in partnership with Bartlett. It's actually Bartlett's program. And as an extension educator, I help lead it. I lead the program. It is all year, and that sounds very daunting, but it's 22 sessions. So it's weekly for about 8 weeks. And then for the following 4 months, it's bi-weekly. And then the final 6 months are actually monthly. So there's like, you know, there's it's a lifestyle change program. And so we track food, we track exercise and daily general activity. And the goal of it, because it is developed from a Centers for Disease Control program, it's an official diabetes prevention program. It's research-based program that really does help people with behavior change and both the skills and the knowledge to make lifestyle change that can be that has been proven to be beneficial.
What are some of the tracking tools you use for, I guess, food and exercise?
Right. I've actually learned, so Lose It is what we ask the folks in the program to use, because Lose It has a great coaches sort of aspect to it. So I can actually view people's, the food that they've been eating and make comments directly to them, sort of almost real time, not quite, but, you know, that's really, really helpful for the first 8 weeks, because we really do focus in on what are you eating now? And what are the good things to keep, to continue with? And what are the things that maybe some changes would be helpful in terms of fat, overall calories, fiber, et cetera. And so being able to track that from my side as a coach is very helpful. And so Lose It is the program that we ask people to use.
What kind of goals do people set for themselves when they sign up for the program?
Oh, well, people will often set very ambitious goals for themselves. But one of the great things about this program is that it is proven to work even if your goals are not that ambitious. So we ask people to commit to trying to lose 5 to 7% of their current body weight. So we're not talking necessarily about, you know, getting down to your college weight or anything like that. It may just be 10 to 20 pounds, depending on where you're starting from. The thing that we ask of everybody as well is to be increasing to 150 minutes of activity. That's like exercise type activity, bringing your heart rate up, bringing your respiration up, 150 minutes a week. And so some people are already there, and just need to make other changes. But some people, you know, really do need to find whatever that activity or activities that might work for them. And so those are the two main things that we do in the program. But over the course of the 22 sessions, we, of course, dial into some pretty detailed specific aspects in the food category and the exercise category to really help with understanding why you might be getting in your own way sometimes, why other people might be, a barrier that you need to get past, or your schedule, whatever it might be. There's so many different things in our lives. And so 22 sessions allows us to really get into those pretty in depth, so you can really assess yourself and make changes.
I know that it's called Health Matters Diabetes Prevention Program. Would you welcome people who were joining that maybe weren't concerned about diabetes but wanted to make some of these changes, like weight loss and activity and things like that?
Yes, yes, certainly. So I believe in general, the priority, if you will, for letting people into the program. So people do apply, and there are limited spaces. So if you're interested, go ahead and apply soon. We're going to be doing it both in person and simultaneously online. So you'll have those choices. But the priority for getting folks in is, if you have a diagnosis of prediabetes, that's awesome, but that's, you know, that is a good reason for getting into the program. There's also in the application, there's actually a questionnaire that helps designate whether you, if you don't have a diagnosis of prediabetes, maybe you are at high risk for it. And so that's another way, but the prediabetes is part of what is kind of called a metabolic syndrome. And so there are lots of other potential, conditions that you might be starting to have, hypertension, heart disease, even Alzheimer's is being understood. Some cognitive things are being understood as part of these metabolic syndrome, which is all of these different potential chronic diseases that really all of them come back to lifestyle to some level at the very least. There's also sometimes hereditary issues, etc. But so although we do kind of focus on prediabetes, really folks get in the program because maybe they have heart disease, high risk for heart disease, et cetera.
I see. So I hadn't realized there's an application process, although that does make sense. So how many spots are available? How hard is it to get in?
Well, there's 16 spots available, eight in person and eight online. So in the application, it actually asks, which one would you prefer? Or do you not care? And there is a little bit of the ability to move between those two, because of course we need to be flexible. It's always possible that we need to go entirely online for all we know. But our hope is to be able to do the two, both in person and online. And so that's how many, so 16 total, but with those limits also in those two different types.
And what kind of success have you seen with this program over the years you've been involved? Does the course meet its objectives, and are the participants happy with the outcomes?
So far, so good. Yeah. So it's actually, what's great is this is actually a Medicare approved program. And to do that, you actually need to be meeting benchmarks in terms of progress, keeping records of folks, for folks, and reporting those. So Cynthia Gordon at the hospital is actually a diabetes program coordinator. And so she actually needs to keep this program basically certified. And if we weren't having good results from our folks, we would have some trouble getting recertified. And the feedback from folks, and one of the things that, you know, just word of mouth is really a great thing in terms of pretty regularly in each class that I have led, there've been a few folks who've been referred from people who took it previously. Hmm. And that's usually a pretty good indicator that people felt good about it and they've been telling others, and also that people in the community have been seeing their friends who've been through a program like this and see that there's been some pretty good results. So that's pretty great. And Juno's terrific for getting word of mouth. You know, people see each other and things like that. There are other programs like this that may be online. And this one is good for folks if being in person or, you know, meeting with someone face-to-face, whether it is a Zoom face-to-face or whether it's, you know, in the classroom. But if you really need a check-in each week, you know, on a specific time of day, this is really a good program for folks for whom that would be helpful.
Well, we've just covered a lot of information about that Health Matters program. And for folks who want to know more or miss something or would like to find out if this is right for them, I understand there's an info session next week on Wednesday.
There is. On the 15th at 5:30, there's an info session. It'll be by Zoom. Basically, probably the easiest thing is people can call me at 523-3280 extension 1. And I will get the information out to them. That's probably the easiest. We do have flyers out there and things like that, but that's the easiest way to get started. Whether you're going to join the info session or whether you'd like to receive the application, you can go ahead and give me a call.
That sounds good. I understand the registration deadline is December 30th, and the program starts January 12th and goes all year long. There's a cost associated, but there are scholarships available. Is that right?
Correct. It's $350, but the Bartlett Foundation every year does very generous fee waivers or scholarships for folks who request them. And you can also, Medicare coverage is possible.
Wow, that's so nice. It just sounds like a terrific program, Sarah. Thanks for sharing all that information about it.
You bet.
But wait, there's more. The next program the next one on the list of things to talk about today aims to help those self-manage chronic disease. It's called Living Well Southeast Alaska. Before we get into it, why the emphasis on self-management? Is that safe for people with serious health conditions?
Oh, so there is research behind this that being able to help people know when they are maybe in an emergency and when they're not, or helping them know how to talk with the medical providers more, using the right words, things like that. So this isn't necessarily like teaching you how to do the medication or anything like that. This is how to keep your spirits up, how to know how to access resources. There's, of course, a little bit about lifestyle things in terms of food and exercise and the research behind those. But a lot of it is actually helping people with some of the just sort of skill building, whether sort of mental skill building, how to get past certain barriers you might have to talking with medical professionals or seeking help or asking friends for help or whatever it might be. It's a six, this one, the Living Well Southeast Alaska, it's entirely online, and it's a six-week program starting on January 10th. And it will actually be co-led by my co-worker in Sitka, Jasmine Shaw. And so we will be co-leading it for six sessions. And so this one is about any kind of chronic disease that someone may be living with, something that you've already been diagnosed with, whether it may be a diabetes or heart disease or depression or anything that is ongoing. And then we're going to also in March have a second version, which is specific to those who have been diagnosed with diabetes. And so this one, Living Well Southeast, is broader. And then we're going to be doing what we're calling a diabetes supper club, because it's going to be in the evenings. So that one's specific to diabetes. And either one of these, again, if you want information about them, giving me a call is really the easiest way. 523-3280 extension 1. And Living Well and the Diabetes Supper Club, those are both $50, but again, we have fee waivers that are available if you just ask for them, and both of those are online, 6 weeks long.
Excellent. All right, so we've got Living Well Southeast Alaska and the Diabetes Southeast Supper Club, both sort of emphasize self-management. And Diabetes Supper Club is, of course, focused more on diabetes. So if you're just joining me, I'm speaking with Sarah Lewis, Associate Professor with the UAF Cooperative Extension Service, and she's ramping up for a big course load this winter. Sarah, out of the three, well, we talk a lot about the different courses that you teach. How much of it is your own? How much input do you have on the curricula?
You know what? So Health Matters, well, all three of them have very specific curricula because they are research-based. The Health Matters one, I do get to, if you will, riff a little bit more. I get to include my personality a little more. Because it is longer, we can get into some pretty in-depth discussions as a group and things like that. The other two, because they are the Living Well Southeast and the Southeast Supper Club, those are a bit more, if you will, rigid in their curricula. So we really do, there's specific things that we need to cover, but it's if you've ever taken any kind of class from me, you know that I do kind of infuse my personality in it. And Jasmine is also a really dynamic instructor also. So we do try to keep it pretty upbeat. And even though there is relatively heavy duty curriculum that we're looking at, we do want to keep it really positive and really working, you know, moving forward, and lots of fun for folks.
That's great. And finally, there's Preserving Alaska's Bounty, an online food preservation course that starts in January. But I'm curious as to what is around to preserve this time of year.
Oh, this is getting people ready for for the harvest seasons, because usually people can't take these classes when they're actively harvesting their berries and their fish and their venison. So this is to get everybody ready for it. So yes, so this is on sort of one of my other topics that I do a lot of classes on, is preserving food at home. And this is an online class that I developed when the pandemic hit and we needed to go online. And I actually have decided to keep doing it at least once a year, because there are folks who really do enjoy this format, because it is different from the in-person. And so this one is going to be a 5-session, it's a hybrid course in that it's online. So there's like all of the resources and everything are online on Canvas. But then once a week, we will have a live Zoom where I will do, we'll demonstrate stuff and we can talk about projects. But then people will do the food preservation projects on their own time over the course of the week in between the Zoom sessions. And we'll be covering everything from water bath canning and pressure canning, pickling, fermenting, dehydration, smoking fish, culturing sourdough and yogurt, making sausage. And so you can do that all in the comfort of your own kitchen while watching me, you know, perform online.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That sounds like a really great course. All those things that you mentioned are, you know, all things that it's good to know, right? Because it's all things that you can get year round, but you might have some of the stuff in the freezer at the moment. You could thaw out some raw meat and process it as part of the course. So anyway,
absolutely.
I'm just like thinking of all these different ideas for delicious local foods.
Exactly.
Well, Sarah Lewis, thanks so much for giving us this rundown of information about all the excellent courses you're leading this winter. Is there anything else you want to share before we say goodbye?
No, just happy holidays to all, and you know, start in on making your New Year's resolutions, and whether it's a gift you want to give to yourself when it comes to lifestyle and making changes for your good health, or if you want to give a gift to someone else to help them preserve their bounty for the upcoming year, give me a call at 523-3280 extension 1 and we'll get you started.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much, Sarah. It's good to talk with you.
Thank you, Shelley. You too.
Take care. I'm Shelley Delaney, and in the dark days of winter, we could all use some holiday cheer, so that is what the Juno Symphony aims to provide. Here with us now is Charlotte Truitt, the executive director. Hi, Charlotte.
Hi, good afternoon.
And we also have Franz Felkel here. He's the concertmaster, as well as the artistic director of the Holiday Cheer Concert. Hi, Franz.
Hey, good to be here.
Great to see you both again. How does it feel to be back live with an in-person performance? Charlotte, let's start with you.
Oh, I think it's great. I mean, I think something we've been long awaiting for, and people are happy to be together, and we're doing our best to provide a great, safe environment for a wonderful concert. And I know Franz can probably speak to what it's like for himself and for the musicians. I know this has been a long time of wanting to be together performing for live audiences as well, for the players.
Yeah, Franz, how does it affect you as a performer when there's no audience to play for? Like there has been with our videos that we shot around this time last year, which were fun and they served their purpose, but no audience must make it difficult for you as a player.
Yeah, it was a little weird thinking back to it. You know, the very first recording that we did, or a video recording that we did, you know, I thought this is going to be weird with no audience, and I thought, well, I won't be nervous, you know, performing because there's no audience, but, you know, there's cameras there and they're recording, and, you know, you do feel some sense of that, oh, okay, I'm on stage kind of thing. But, you know, it's definitely not the same as having the energy of the audience there in the room with you. And we're really excited to have that back and perform for our community.
I love that this upcoming concert event even integrates some audience participation. So it's a real nod to the people who have been missing from live performances for too long now. So this might be a good time to ask about the program. What are some of the pieces that you'll be performing?
So we did a virtual holiday cheer concert last year, and we're taking some of those favorite tunes that we did from the virtual season, and we're just doing them again because we know everyone loves those, and we're adding some new things to mix it up. One thing that we're adding for the strings is we're doing Vivaldi's Winter from the Four Seasons. And so that's something new, something different that you won't normally see on a holiday concert, but it fits the bill just fine, and it's a great piece of music. We're adding a few different new jazzy tunes to the mixture, and a few different, like, what we call compilations, where, you know, it's a mix of different holiday tunes. And I know that Roger has a few new ones. Last year, the strings did a kind of Nutcracker, three movements from the Nutcracker, and this year Roger's going to take that over, and so you'll hear a different version of that. You'll hear the brass playing that.
Charlotte, do you have a favorite song on that list, or one that you're most looking forward to hearing?
Oh, you know, I've always been a Nutcracker fan, and I love Tchaikovsky, and so I always say, please make sure we get Nutcracker in. So I guess I have to give a nod to the Nutcracker pieces, but those are great. And then just, I don't know, I have a hard time picking a single favorite. I think with holiday music, it just brings back so many memories for, I think, most of us. And I have so many favorites. You know, growing up with lots of Christmas music around our house, it was a staple. I think we probably, when I was growing up, my parents had drug us kids to every single Christmas concert we could find. And so by the time we got to Christmas, we knew all of them every year. That was one of our family traditions. So I think that's part of why, I guess, it was just a natural for me to really encourage the birth of this concert combination for us, you know, being an arts organization and providing music. I think music at this time of year is always important. And I think this year, just as it was last year, it's even more important because holidays are a wonderful time of family togetherness. And a lot of this music is reflective of that and those family memories.
Franz, what about you? Is there a piece that you're looking forward to hearing or playing? Will you actually be performing with the Juno Symphony this weekend too?
Yes, absolutely. I'll be performing as concertmaster. Alan Young is going to be our guest conductor for the strings. And I think we did it last year. We found a really, really beautiful arrangement of Silent Night. And Silent Night has a special place in my heart for a Christmas tune. Every Christmas Eve, my family gets together and gathers around and has a meal, and then gathers around the tree, and we shut off all the lights on the tree and light actual candles, and we sing Silent Night in both German and English. So that's a pretty special one, and the arrangement that we have almost brings a tear to my eye every time.
Oh,
yeah, I'm looking
forward.
That's how we're going to close the strings portion of our program.
What about the symphony itself, the group itself? Is there a piece that they all get really excited about playing?
You know, I think the jazzy kind of things that we're playing, we're doing, let me just think, we have a lot on the program. It's kind of,
I know, it's long.
A bunch of stuff on the program. I think White Christmas is a good one. They really enjoy that, and we got that kind of, that lush, you know, LA recording string sounds to it, and the arrangement is really good, and, you know, that's just a classic. And I think everyone enjoys that. I think the orchestra is looking forward to a little bit of a challenge with Vivaldi Winter. You know, that's a tough piece to play in general, and they're doing a great job, and I think they've taken up the challenge and are really looking forward to playing that.
Who are the special guests for this holiday cheer concert, and what do they add in your opinion? Charlotte, we'll start with you.
Okay. Well, we have some guests coming for both parts of the program. We have a few of the string players who, folks that have been with the Juno Symphony for many, many years are coming back. In fact, I just got notified from Julia Bestacek, just landed, for those that know her here in town. She's here with us. And then we have a couple of other string players that are coming who were born and raised here who are returning, like Andrew Shermer and Beth Loudon. And so I think that's really a special part of this performance for the musicians to get back together again. We also have Ed Littlefield coming on percussion with the brass. And so many folks know and love Ed with his involvement here in the schools and his working with children with percussion and drumming. And he's a fabulous musician. He'll be here as well. We have Brian Neal coming from Florida. He actually used to play with the Dallas Brass and has been a teacher as part of the faculty of Sitka Fine Arts Camp for many, many years. And Roger Schmidt, of course, he's one of our own, but he also does the Sitka Fine Arts Camp. So he's a Juno Symphony member and the Sitka Fine Arts Camp executive director. He'll be over, a phenomenal musician and just a wonderful guy who has such a heart for music in the region and throughout the state, and really does a lot to encourage music education. And I think all of our arts organizations are very mindful of what's happening for kids throughout the pandemic and trying to inspire and encourage them to keep on playing. And so Roger will be here. We also have a couple of folks coming from the Los Angeles area. And then we have someone coming from New York, actually. So we have a broad range of musicians, and it's going to be really top quality, beautiful music. People are going to love it. We're also really pleased that Sarah Radke Brown and the Vox Borealis singing group will be joining us in their complete holiday finery, full costumes, and they'll be singing a few numbers right after the intermission and before the concert in the lobby. So we've done all that we can to incorporate as many people as we safely can do and bring together a broad spectrum of the musical community here in Juneau.
Now, in past performances, you've played at Yadat Atkahle Juno Douglas High School, and this time you'll be at Thunder Mountain. How's that transition going for you guys?
It's going really well. You know, there are different positives about both of those venues, and we are appreciative of the opportunity to play out there. We're working with Bo Anderson, the auditorium manager, who covers both facilities, and the size of that auditorium is really nice. The stage is really great, and I think it's going to be a really good setting for this concert. And we've got good parking, and we've got a great big lobby to work with, and I think it's going really well. So we're glad to be out there. It's interesting, we don't always get out to the valley. So for folks that live in the valley, it's a little more convenient. You know, you don't have the winter driving. But then for the folks from town, they're going to have to make the transition. So it needed to be in that venue this time due to some other circumstances with the use of the facility downtown and also the size. You know, we don't anticipate, we are limiting the size of the audience, so it seems to be a better venue for that purpose as well.
What are some of the other requirements for audience members? What do people need to know before they attend?
Right. Well, the COVID mitigation plan, which was approved by the city, incorporates required proof of vaccination for all attendees. And then everyone is wearing masks as well. We went a step further, and we do have some social distancing built into our ticketing program, where every party or bubble, if you will, whenever you purchase your ticket, it automatically blocks a seat off on either side of your party. So there's a little more elbow room. And then we ask that it be a symptom-free environment as much as possible as well. So encouraging that. We have additional testing of our musicians who are not able to wear a mask while they play or sing. So those folks will be getting the rapid tests the day of the performance as well. So that's an additional layer of COVID mitigation that we've taken under the advice of the city.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm just so glad you found a venue and some really safe ways to have an in-person concert. Again, the concerts will be held Holiday Cheer December 11th at 7:30 and December 12th at 3 p.m. That's Saturday night and Sunday afternoon, Thunder Mountain High School. And I think everybody's really looking forward to it. I was wondering, go ahead, Charlotte.
Oh, I was just going to say one thing on the ticketing. We would encourage people to get on our website and get tickets in advance. There will be no door sales of tickets so that we can help gather information for contact tracing and to control the seating. So tickets do need to be purchased in advance, and we don't have a whole lot of seats left. There are some, but not too many. So we're not crying wolf on it this time. We really are limited, and we are filling up really fast.
Thank you for mentioning that. I think that's good advice. And I just wanted to see if we could talk for a second about Sundays at the Symphony on KRNN. That's something that we started back in 2020, and our audience, it's just been a really popular program, as well as an extra effort on your part. So I wanted to mention that because we won't be able to broadcast Sunday's Symphony on KRNN as we usually do. We just don't have the connection set up at Thunder Mountain. So I thought we could just promote a little bit about what Sunday at the Symphony has produced and what we can look forward to on the radio broadcast for December.
Okay, yeah, we are going to do a couple weeks where we will be replaying our holiday concerts from last year. So it's broken into two segments. One week is the holiday strings. One weekend is the holiday brass. And then we will be recording this weekend's performance for later broadcast. So we weren't able to do it as a live event, but we will be rebroadcasting it. I believe that date's the 18th. Don't quote me on that, but it's that third weekend of December, right before Christmas. And then the week after Christmas, Franz put together a great radio show featuring the Vienna Philharmonic's traditional New Year's concerts. They're really well known for their New Year's concerts, and Franz put together that program. So on New Year's, you'll get that concert flavor as well. We're also so grateful that 360 North is going to be broadcasting last year's Holiday Cheer virtual concert on Christmas night. So on 360 North, folks can view last year's virtual concert. And I don't know, around my house, it's fun to have that playing in the background, even if you aren't watching every minute. It's really beautiful program, and that's on 360 North.
Yeah, we actually now have 360 TV on Roku, so we have a Roku app, and folks, if you have a Roku, and we're working on getting it on more platforms, but for now, it's available on the Roku. And then, of course, Sundays at the Symphony is on KRNN Juneau at 12 noon on Sundays, 102.7 FM, and our new frequency 103.1 FM for downtown in Douglas. Let's see. Well, I just want to thank you both for your time today and ask if there's anything else you want to share about the symphony, the upcoming seasons past the holiday, or upcoming performances past the holiday.
Right. Well, we will, within the next couple of weeks, we'll have tickets available for our partial season, the winter spring season, we're calling it. We have three concerts coming up the end of January. The last weekend of January, we have our concert, and we have an April concert and our June Pops concert. And information for all of that will be on our website. We are thrilled that we have been able to have a new music director selected. So Dr. Christopher Cook will be having his first concert with us on January 29th and 30th. And that concert's going to be the Sibelius II Symphony, which was a musician's pick. All the musicians got to vote on what they would like to do in that concert. Also, John Unzicker, many know John here in town, an incredible guitarist. He will be playing the Rodrigo Guitar Concerto in January. So he will be the featured soloist, and I think it's just going to be an incredible concert. So people will want to look ahead and get on our website here in a couple weeks to get tickets for that concert as well.
Well, I look forward to hearing back from the Juneau Symphony, and hopefully we'll get to interview some of those folks for the upcoming performances. I especially look forward to talking to Dr. Cook.
Yeah, that'd be great. I think he's eager to get to know the community and be really involved. So that will be wonderful.
Franz, anything that you'd like to add today before we say goodbye?
Just really looking forward to our performance this weekend and the season ahead. We do have raffle tickets for sale at the concert, so buy those. It really helps support our community. There's some wonderful prizes on there. I think it's for the first prize, it's $1,500 or two round trip tickets on Alaska Airlines. Help support the symphony. You can support that way. And I'll see you at the symphony.
Thanks so much to you both. Have a great time this weekend.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it, Shelley.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. During the winter, the Juno Audubon Society takes time out to help us appreciate the variety of birds and wildlife that we can see year-round here in Juno with a series of monthly lectures. This month's presenter is here with us today. Welcome photographer Helen Unruh. Hello, Helen.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. And here with us also is Brenda Wright, the program manager for Juno Audubon Society. Hi again, Brenda.
Hi, good to see you again.
It's good to have you both here today. Helen, let's start with you. Would you please introduce yourself for our listeners?
My name is Helen Unruh. I live here in Juneau and have lived in Southeast Alaska for many years.
Tell me a little about, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say birding. Brenda has kind of, she does bird walks every once in a while, and we go out and just enjoy seeing what we can see.
Tell me a little about how you became a photographer.
Somebody gave me, my parents gave me a camera when I was in like fifth grade, I don't know. And I've been taking pictures since then.
What makes birds an interesting subject for you?
Oh, they're very challenging because you have to get relatively close to get a nice picture. And they're just gorgeous. They're beautiful and quirky and just fun to try to capture.
Do you have a particular bird that you that you like to chase down?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. It's like whichever bird I happen to think of at the moment, that's the one that's most interesting. They are, each one of them has a different personality and a different look, and they're just fun to try to see them. And if I'm lucky, I get one on camera, you know.
What kind of camera or cameras do you like to work with?
I just have a Nikon 7500, and I only have a 70 to 300 millimeter lens. So I have to get relatively close to get good pictures.
What do you do with your photographs? Do you display them anywhere around town or at home or put them on your computer?
No, they're just personal challenges, I guess. I do post a few on my Facebook page, but that's about it.
She's very generous at loaning them to us for when we have projects or posters, though, that's for sure.
Brenda, what are some of your favorite photographs of Helen's?
Oh my gosh, you know, she's so persistent. She'll go back to the same place over and over because she saw a great bird, but it wouldn't get close enough, or it flew off just as she was about to get it, you know. So the style of watching the birds actually doing their normal everyday things, she captures that so well.
The talk on Thursday is called Stater Harbor, Mostly Birds. Is there any meaning there apart from the subject and the geographic location?
Well, Stater Harbor is just a fantastic place to see all different kinds of birds. And I put mostly birds because there are also some other interesting things like the jellyfish and sea lions and harbor seals. So there are a few other things as well, but definitely if you're a birder, there are lots of birds and they pass through as they're migrating. So we get to see them. Unfortunately, we see them in their winter plumage. It'd be great to see them in their breeding plumage, but you know, we take what we can get. So
what is it about? Birder, go ahead.
Oh, I was just thinking if you like birds, it's a great place to see a variety of them.
Yeah, well, what makes it such a hot spot for birds?
Oh, probably because it's rather protected, and it appears that they're getting plenty of food. I would imagine just the protection. They kind of hang out there in the wintertime, some of them. When they're passing through, they stop there.
One of the things I really like is that because there's so much movement and people interaction all the time there, the birds are not really afraid. And so you can get much, much closer to them than you could to a normal wild bird. Sometimes they'll pop up right next to your toes when you're on the dock.
I was just going to ask, where in the harbor is the best place to kind of post up and wait for a bird?
I don't know if there's a best place. You just walk out on the floats and hope one shows up. Sometimes they're right there as you, if you've been to the harbor, walking along that the edge, sometimes you see them right there, and other times you have to walk out to the breakwater. You just never know where they're going to pop up. Like Brenda said, they might be right under your toes.
So what kinds of birds like to hang out there?
Oh, right now some fun ones are the long-tailed duck, which is has a very striking coloration on the male. There are several loons. We've seen up to 9 in a group. They're always fun to watch. And of course, we have the usual eagles, crows. Let's see what else is. I'm trying to think what I just saw recently. Of course, the glaucus wing, and people are also seeing just the regular glaucus, which we tried to find, and it's hard to tell the difference between the two. Marbled murrelets, they're fun. They just little stocky little birds that pop up and down. So those are a few of them.
What kind of bird would you be lucky to spot there?
Well, for me, I think the loons and the long-tailed ducks, I don't see them on a regular basis. My last picture of a loon was in 2018, so it's been a couple years since I've seen one out there. The long-tailed ducks, they're a little more skittish. They kind of hang out towards the outside. And I don't see them as frequently as some of the others either. So they're probably... Brenda,
yeah, that's what Betty Tellum has given me is that she tells me that there's a bird I've been looking for 5 years, you know, a redneck grebe, and she says, oh yeah, there's 3 of them.
I was told that we were looking at some loons the other day. I went on a dock walk a couple days after Thanksgiving, and they were in the channel. I forget what kind of loons they were, but we looked at them through the binoculars, and they looked like loons to me. So that's where I saw some just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, we often see them. I mean, even at Auk Rec, you see them, but they're usually way out, and you kind of see the silhouette, and it's definitely a loon by its shape. So it's nice to see them in the harbor where you can actually get a closer look at them.
Yeah, we certainly didn't get any pictures, just mental pictures. Mm-hmm. So what will you be presenting in your talk, Helen?
Well, just as the title said, and I mentioned a few of the other critters that show up at the harbor, and then I'm just going to show a few of the birds that I've observed there right now. Unless I add some more, I keep editing my list. I have about 20 or so birds that I've seen there regularly.
That's great. Brenda, can you share with us the details of Thursday's talk? I know it's at 7, it's via Zoom. How do we access it?
Well, you can go onto our Facebook page and or our webpage, Dune Audubon Society, and get the Zoom link right there. And hopefully that works well for you. It's been working pretty well this winter for us. And when she says 20 birds, you know, in the wintertime, I go on a lot of bird walks, and I feel really like I can't go home until I find 10. So to find that many in one place is just makes it more fun. And I think this winter, for some reason, we have a few more loons close to shore, because I think we got some herring hanging with us a little bit, and they sure like their fish.
Also, Brenda, I noticed that the Christmas bird count is coming up. Do you want to say a little bit about that?
Yeah, and you know, this is another year like last year, where we normally would get together and assign routes and go with each other and then have a really nice potluck while we tally up all the things. But because of COVID, the coordinator, Patty Rose, has got a bunch of routes, and she's assigning those, and you can only go with a person inside your bubble if you're doing that. But we really appreciate people that have special birds in their yards. Like there's some folks that have a couple of flickers in North Douglas, and maybe a towhee, a spotted towhee in the valley. If they could tell us that, put in an e-bird, or just call and tell any of us about it, then we could put it on our Christmas bird list, because we want to beat Ketchikan. They always beat us.
All right, Juno. All right, listeners. I hope you're up to the challenge. That gives people a little bit more incentive, I suppose, to count those birds and to report them. Any instructions on how to? Any special instructions on how to do that, Brenda?
No, for folks that aren't acquainted with eBird, they can contact any of us on the board and we'll help them out. And people that don't do computers much, it's perfectly okay for you to look out your window and count your feeder birds and then let us know. We'll be happy to report it for you.
That's great. And how can we get in touch with you?
Well, we're at the Juno Audubon webpage. There's an email called info, or you can email any of the board members.
That's great. Well, Brenda Wright and Helen Unruh, thank you so much for coming on today and talking birds. And again, Helen's talk is this Thursday, 7 o'clock via Zoom. Is there anything else that either of you would like to share before we sign off today?
Oh, one just little brief thing. Since we've been having such a lovely winter so far, our January program is going to be Birds in Bahama.
That sounds like we're ready to be transported into the tropics.
Warm sunshine sounds good.
Helen, how about you? Anything else? You get the last word today.
No, we just look forward to seeing everyone, and thank you for having us on today.
Thank you so much for being here. Take care.
Thanks, Shelley.